Okay, let me ask you a few questions. Let's talk about restaurants. Would you be willing to wait for a really good restaurant a half hour, or would you just eat somewhere kind of crappy because you could get in right away?
What do you think? The look on people's faces when they wait in line is like, is this, what are you going to eat or to stand quietly?
Have you ever uttered the phrase, get off my lawn?
No.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I've said, but I didn't mean like old man, like, get off my lawn. I meant more like, this is my property, so get off my lawn.
I'm not going to sugarcoat this for you. You have early onset grumpiness.
What?
Early onset grumpiness, EOG. You're going to begin to enjoy fewer and fewer things in your life. You'd be saying things like, who are these people?
Who are those people? It's a real question.
The only reason you leave the house is to see classic old movies, and even then you'll say, it had some good parts, but all in all, it was fairly uneven. You're very young to have EOG. Your life is going to change forever.
Is there anything I can do?
Normally we try meds, but you're too young for them. I'm sorry. I'll notify your family.
Don't notify my sister. She didn't even pick up the phone half the time. She gives people a hard time.
TBTL!
Hey, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Danny.
What's wrong with Mark?
He's cranky today.
All right. Let's toss the ball around.
How did these buff dudes escape my radar? I thought I knew about every single buff dude.
Look at the size of that boy's head.
Shh.
I'm not kidding. It's like an orange on a toothpick.
Shh, you gotta give the boy a complex.
Well, that's a huge noggin.
Remember, boys, no points for second place.
We're done. It's the wake-up bell time.
It's time to do this, everybody. It's time for a Thursday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's an audiophile's nightmare.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
What an idiot.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, right here in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, home, as many of you know, of the 0-3 Sledgehogs YMCA men's basketball team. Lost to a team last night that only had, I think, three players show up initially. So my basketball glory still, my reach. What do they say? Your reach should always exceed your grasp. Anyway, it's gonna be a long time before I get back in touch with whatever scant basketball glory I used to have, because we are not good. What is good? Is episode 2822 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Which is where we find ourselves on this Thursday morning. I saw this story in the New York Times about a guy in Germany who started driving a mobile van or truck that he had outfitted with laundry facilities, and he would drive it alongside of tour buses as they were coming in to Berlin to try to get the rock stars to let him wash their laundry.
It's a tough but rewarding job, one that takes years to move into.
And it worked, and now he is the official rock and roll laundry person of Germany and really Europe. We will tell you about Der Topft coming up later on the show. Plus, it is a Thursday, so we got some Blursday messages, which we will share with all of you. Plus emails, v-mails, and plenty of other things, including the welcoming onto the program of this young man, the longest running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. His song goes out to all the coffee lovers of the world. I thought he smelled bad on the outside. He is in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. He is Andrew
Fireball
Walsh, and he joins me right now. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I'm going to jump in here with something that it's a little risky, is an interesting topic, but I'm going to run it by you. While you were doing your intro, I remembered that I had an envelope sitting here from my bank, which sent me a new credit card, apparently. How the old credit card may have been compromised in some sort of a batch pirating operation. That's how I like to picture it.
$100 a day, $500 a week. That's rich.
That's it.
So they send me a new card, and it's been sitting here for a few days, and I've got to activate the new card, and then the old one's going to, you know how it works. But I just pull the new card out, and for a second I thought it was just a promotional card, It does not have the credit card number on the front of it at all. It doesn't have those embossed numbers that we used to know you would use in the 80s because you'd use those knuckle-busting credit card readers at old gas stations and stuff. Like, the front of the credit card is just smooth. Smooth as a baby's behind. And then the number is printed on the back of the card. So two questions for you. Am I in trouble for saying smooth as the baby's behind?
Yes.
And secondly, have you seen cards like this, or am I being fished?
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
I have the same kind of card.
Really?
And it works just great. Because as you pointed out, we no longer live in a world of carbon copies and of, you don't need those. You don't need those raised numbers so as to establish, like you said, in triplicate at the gas station or what have you, that you bought the thing. So that's immaterial. And what I like about my card is that even though the credit limit was only recently raised above $500, it is black in color. And if you were to just look at it too quickly, you might think, ooh, that guy has a black card. That guy must really be somebody. I am somebody who now has a credit limit of like $1,000 on their credit card.
You're a thousand.
But it's very low profile. It's very it's almost kind of, you got like, it's like primer black. It's almost murdered out. Like, was the fashion for a while with for some people, you get a car and then you get the black wheel, like black rims on it. You make sure that every element of the car that can be is black. So anyway, my point is that totally works. Is your card, let's just start getting personal with the dazzling deets of your credit or bank card. Is it associated with Amazon.com by any chance?
It is not. This one is only associated with my bank. So mine is not. Okay. Now I'm a little jealous because mine is not murdered out. But it does look classier. It's kind of got a darker color. It's almost a dark gold color. Like, maybe if you were, renting a slightly nicer car, or maybe your slightly richer uncle got a new car, it might be this color.
Right.
And give me the gold. I want the gold.
Smooth.
And also on the subject of things that are gold.
Goldfish.
Oh.
You forgot.
Can I just mention, getting kind of an upgrade one did not expect. I was when I was traveling home a week or two ago, I had to rent a car in Seattle and drive up to Bellingham on a Friday night. It was after I was in Atlanta, and my usual car rental service, Avis, home of the wizard number, was out of cars. Or actually, truthfully, what it was they would not rent me a verified Avis wizard. They would not rent me a car that I was then going to leave in Bellingham.
Oh, yeah, because they can't get it back out of Bellingham.
I guess, because I'm going into the least interesting minutia of this, but a lot of times what will happen, I've learned, is if you try to rent a car one way, they'll tell you, we do not have cars. But then if you say, well, what if I bring it back to your location? They're like, oh, we got so many cars. And I don't know why that makes me feel like I'm being lied to by the app. I'm like, so you do have cars. The message should say, we have cars, but not that you can take to Bellingham, sir.
Right.
But anyway, I had to go with a leading competitor. And I will tell you, a leading competitor enterprise that I do like, because they will drive you to your house when you're done or pick you up.
Kristen Bell talks about that in the commercial.
As the ads say, or used to say in the, like 90s, a pick enterprise will pick you up. And then someone was always there for a while. Their ad campaign was like someone was driving an enterprise rental car, like an employee was driving it to the person's house, but it was wrapped like a present. And I was like it was like wrapping paper, brown wrapping paper around the car. And I was like, don't cover the windshield.
Yeah.
You will crash and die. But anyway, I picked enterprise, and no joke, that is a very good option to have, because most of the hassle around a rental car in your hometown, which I know is a kind of odd, maybe for most people that's just so infrequent that it doesn't matter, but it happens to me a lot. And then I'm at the airport with no car. Like, I've returned the rental car usually to the airport, and then I'm that, which is, I know because I jogged there once. It's like 7 miles from our house or something. So all of this to say, it's, I don't know, 7:30 at night on a Friday. The weather is terrible. The traveling has been harrowing. And because of the vagaries of like Expedia or something, whatever I used, I walked down to the Enterprise rental car and the guy goes, oh, you got a premium car. Now, it wasn't expensive. It was the normal price. It just, you know how those things are with inventory. Like that just must have been like what they had left for some reason.
Yeah. So what'd you get?
I got, well, I'm very into like not being, because it was raining torrentially. I wanted to try to not be right on the road level, like, you know, one with the mist on I-5. And so I got, but I didn't want some giant SUV nightmare. So I got like a, I guess it would have been a Mercedes-Benz. Like, I don't even know what it's called, CL300 or something. And I'm going somewhere with this. Not somewhere interesting, but somewhere. And so I that's what they gave me. And it was like a very luxe car. Even though I have to be honest, there were some functionality issues. Like I accidentally shifted it into some sort of sport mode where I get on I-5 and I cannot operate the car, Andrew. It's like I'm trying to drive. It's revving at like 800 million thousand RPMs, but not going fast. And the shifter, it doesn't have a typical shifter that we're used to where you have, you know, park, reverse, drive, all of that. It was on the steering column where you would normally control your headlights or your turn signals, that part of the car. That's where you would actually tell this car to go into drive and reverse and stuff. So that was a learning curve.
On the tree, as they
and
say.
And I was learned. What's that?
On the tree.
I mean, it's like indeed, when- it was on the tree. And I was learning this as I was on I-5. And it was crazy traffic and there's all these cars everywhere and I'm like trying to shift like out of whatever bizarro world I had found myself in. Okay, so anyway, again, the end of this story, which I never promised was going to be interesting, so I don't want any guff from anybody, is the people at the Enterprise in Bellingham were, the employees couldn't stop talking about how excited they were to have this car in their portfolio. I pulled up the next day. And the woman who comes up to me goes, are you leaving that car here? I was like, yeah, I think so. And then she goes, like, you know, Christy, get out here. And then like, another lady emerges and she goes, look at the car this guy brought. And Christy's like, you got to be kidding me. And then it's like there's a woman who was washing the cars that had been returned who also, you know, worked there and would, in you know, do intake. And they're like, get Vera in here. And then a guy emerges from the back and they're like, Derek, you're not going to believe this. And then they were like, who gets to drive him home in this car? It was the talk of the Enterprise at Bellingham. And I was like, this is the kind of reception I've been waiting for.
Did you say, guys, you know that I'm not donating this car from my collection, right?
I know.
I'm
you know that.
A rental car. You work here.
I got the sense that they're I honestly, maybe it's just, you know, they maybe it's been a while since they had something exciting happen at the Enterprise on James Street in Bellingham. But they were, it was as if they owned the car now and they were going to get to like, you know, take it home or something. Maybe they were hoping the car would just stay in the ecosystem for a while. And then literally the guy who drove me home, because like, you know, then I hop back in the car with one of the employees and he takes me back to the house. He's like, the whole drive home, he's like, yeah, we never get cool cars. We get a lot of just like, you know, like economy cars. And like, he's just, he's, it's like, he was really, it was, it really brightened their weekend that this car was now in their portfolio.
I cannot, and I'm being totally serious here, I cannot tell if this is one of the happiest stories or one of the saddest stories I've ever heard.
I am going with happy.
I think it's happy, too. I mean, again, I love that people are this excited about their about what they do and their opportunities, and you find joy in these little places. On the other hand, though, you could see this painted as just like, we have so little. Like, let us just... Let us just rent out a nice car once, and it will make our weekends.
I would say this is on
the, I guess,
this is on the sunny side of life, because these were all these kids were all going way further in life than me, because the Enterprise's whole thing. I don't know if you know this. I don't know how this part of the show turned into an ad for this car company or rental car company, but they're famous for college recruiting. And they recruit very heavily out of college. They grab folks who have just graduated or maybe like, you know, not 100% sure on their next move. And they just get like bright-eyed, hopeful, freshly, you know, freshly minted, clean scrubbed kids who are all, like I said, in my experience, really helpful, really know their stuff. And so it's a overall positive environment. In fact, I believe they're one of the major, like, they hire more post college grads or post grads or people recently graduating from college than almost any company in America. So it was more just like everyone there seemed like they were fine with life. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't the thing where it was like this was the one crack of sunlight in an otherwise dark day. This was just a bunch of people in their 20s who just probably like hanging out and were kind of geeked on the car. So that's the good news, I would say.
Did it make you want to rent other nice cars, either from Enterprise or even a different organization, maybe your Avis, and just like once in a while cruise up and make all their days with your – I mean, would it be bad if you left an Avis car at an Enterprise, I guess, is my follow-up question.
Tried to do it in Atlanta, Andrew. Tried to do it in Atlanta.
Just forget where you were?
No, I got confused. That airport, Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, is big. And I remember that Friday I was leaving Atlanta, it was the same day that like the news had emerged that particular airport was the worst airport in America for lines because of the TSA stuff. And I don't mean – oh, you know what? Actually, this is – again, I don't have a great power after this story. And instead of carrying it over to the break, I'll just try to say this in 2 minutes. I basically got to the airport and I was started to really psych myself out on the drive. Like, even though I had more time than normal, I got freaked out that I was going to miss my flight home because of, you know, these lines. And then I was checking, listening to the news on the radio, and they were saying, oh, we got to get to the airport early. And then there's a whole, you take a train, you know, from the rental car area to the airport. So I was getting kind of freaked out. And so much so that I pulled the car. I thought I was pulling into the Avis return. I pull it into one of those cattle chutes, you know, one way, severe tire damage. And I've started doing this thing with my rental car if I'm in a hurry where I just will leave it there. I make sure the keys are in there. I make sure it's in okay shape. But if there's a long line of them checking cars in, I just will, as I'm walking past, say to one of the employees, can you guys just – I'll just get the receipt through the app. I don't need a paper receipt from anyone. So the car will get checked in and it will go into my little account. I am, after all, a wizard. So that's kind of my standard thing. And I get the car and there's tons of people and they're checking cars in. And I'm about to do that. And for a still small voice just says, you should check in with this dude. So I go, hey, oh, by the way, I'm kind of a little bit late for my flight. So I'm just going to head on in. And he looks at the car and he goes, where'd you rent this? And I go, Avis. He goes, yeah, this is budget or whatever. This is dollar. Avis is the next floor up of this like giant parking garage. And I was like, oh, my God. And now I'm in that – like I'm in the trap. I'm like, well, now you own this car.
Yeah. Right. Because if I drive it out, I think my tires are going to get slashed. I don't know how that works.
Exactly. There's like four, Scions parked behind me or something at this point. But he was like, no, you could squirm your way out of this little – he's like, I'm going to back this car up and you can get out. Anyway – here's my point with the airport thing, though. I have never felt more gratitude towards the TSA. And I did a thing that I don't usually do because I feel corny about it. But I literally thanked every TSA person for being there that I talked to. Like, and it was weird. I was psyching myself up to do it because I didn't want to be – I mean, this was a day that I knew for a fact these people are not being paid to be here. They may get eventually paid, but they're not getting paid on this day, and they have bills. And they are here because – they take their job seriously, and I would not be flying home to see my family if not for these people sitting at this X-ray machine or whatever. And so I really – I'm not – the point of this story is not to pat myself on the back. The point of the story is that it was like a totally different experience of going through that security line. Number one, the security line was fine. Go TSA pre-check. I had like 2 hours from before my flight. But I went up to the first person, and I was nervous because I was like, how am I going to pull this off where I – show appreciation, but I don't overdo it or I don't make it weird. I just said, hey, thank you for being here. And it was, you know, the woman was like, I could tell that people had probably been thanking her a little bit that day, but, you know, she was appreciative. And then I got to the next guy and I was like, hey, thanks for being here, man. And then I got like randomly flagged where you have to like go stand with your hands above your head while they wand you down. And as the guy was wanding me down, I was like, thanks for being here, man. And it was not. I mean, hopefully, it was mildly nice for them, of them understanding that I got it, that they were being there as a service to me. But it was nice for me to not just go through with my normal amount of just like low level rage at the process. And so, I don't know if I'll be thanking every TSA person every time I go through, from now on. But I will tell you, I was much. It was a much more pleasant experience for me than gritting my teeth through it, which is my normal move.
I heard a thing on NPR. This is actually happening at a lot of airports, people being appreciative. And the TSA agents just call it appreciation theater, apparently. They just deride it as not really meaning anything. Hey-o!
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
You're really not encouraging me to lean into my best life.
I'll bet you... Now,
but that's fair. That is tough, but fair.
I was wondering if other people were, because, I mean, I do think I heard on the radio that somebody was setting up bins, right? So you can come to an airport and leave like canned food and various things for TSA workers. Have you heard that too, or have you seen it? I don't think I'm making that up.
I haven't heard that, but I believe it. Also, that's the saddest thing.
Yeah, right?
In the words of Bob Edwards, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. That we would be, people would be working their jobs but not getting paid, so now we would need to donate food to them.
Yeah.
And also, I think we have a donation bin. Typically, it's called The Stuff They Confiscate From Me.
Yeah, right.
As I wrote on
Twitter.
That's
why people are bringing in donating.
The president said that,
yeah. People are donating knives
to them for years.
People are donating like, brass knuckles to them. They're donating all kinds of things that you need when you're not
you
getting a paycheck.
You can eat any foodstuffs over 3 ounces that you confiscate from us, the customers. Okay, good. We got it back to negative town. Let's take a quick break, and then we will come back and we'll talk about this guy who washes the clothes of the stars. Very relevant to your interest, Andrew. I don't know if you got a chance to check out the story, but I could see it making an appearance on Spotless.
You know, I'm bummed because I kept on seeing this headline. And I kept opening it in a tab and thinking I'm going to read this and then I'm going to send it to Luke because it sounds like a good story. And I kept not doing that over the past couple of days. And then I hear your intro today and I realize if I had just read this, I would be much more prepared for today's show. So I will be listeners, a little baby here sucking my thumb as you tell me a story. Is that how people listen, by the way?
I mean, that's how most of the babies listen.
Oh, okay, good.
Listening audience.
Great.
No, that's good. That's fine because I'm excited to dazzle you with some of the little deets. So that's coming up on the show. Stay with us. Oh man, this song, Jay-Z. Did you listen to the Black Album a lot?
I did. It was my first Jay-Z record, but I didn't realize that it's funny. I didn't know this was off the Black Album. This doesn't ring a bell to me, but that was the first Jay-Z record I listened to. So I don't know.
You know, I don't remember this being on the Black Album either. But I'm looking at. No, it's right there. It's on there.
Huh.
Interlude. December 4th. What more can I say? Encore.
I
change
that.
Clothes. Dirt off your shoulder. Threat. Moment of clarity. 99 problems. You're crazy for this one, Rick. This is the thing. I feel like Jay-Z's mom is the weakest part of the Black Album.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's like
those
talking about Jay-Z.
Yeah.
These long things. And it's like, his mom, it's sweet. She's talking about, I mean, I know she worked hard to, you know, help young Sean Carter get to the point where he could have his rap career. And I think it's sweet that he loves his mom. But I remember listening to the album so much that I could almost quote her parts of it too and just being kind of like, okay, Jay-Z mom. Good thought. Good starting point. Let's start. Now let's go back. Let's re-record that. And let's just talk. What if you emphasize this part? Or what if, you know, I'm like, wanting to go back and post-produce Jay-Z's mom on the Black Album.
Yeah, I don't remember having negative feelings about it at the time. The funny thing is I associate the Black Album with a very specific time, which is when I first started going to the YMCA. Not to do group activities.
You're gonna say you first started going to the club.
Yeah, I would just kind of go. Well, I would dance a lot at the YMCA, usually kind of at the Nautilus area. While people were doing that, I would kind of like dance around.
You put the naughty in Nautilus.
That's exactly right. Anyway, I do remember going to the gym a lot and listening to this record a lot and one of those early New Pornographer records.
Oh, my God.
And I associated with that. I remember just being kind of – I don't know. I think I was more of just fascinated by the storytelling. It's very long. Everybody could use an editor, I would say, including Jay-Z's mom. Maybe especially Jay-Z's mom, but I did like the sort of, she definitely sounds like she's reading and all of that, but I did like the sort of I remember liking the texture that it added to the record because I hadn't heard a lot of stuff like that on records before.
Yeah, I don't know why. I mean, I think not unlike your story yesterday of photographing a guy's car because he was parked in a non-aesthetic way.
Ooh,
yeah. I don't think I – the point of that story that I just told or observation I made was mostly I suck. Like, I don't know why I can't just let Jay-Z's mom have her moment. You know what I mean? Like, I think it was actually very cute and nice, and I think a normal person would hear it and be like, "Aw, sweet." But I was kind of also like, "Yeah, we could let's trim this down a little bit. You're doing well." I also really hope Jay-Z's mom is still healthy right now, because if she's passed away, it's a point that I'm extra annoying with this observation.
Can I do? Is there a way that I can do a really quick update to that car story in the parking lot without having to dig into all of the details and redredge everything that I dredged yesterday? How can we do this? Mm-hmm. How can we summarize what happened? I was a couple of days ago.
I have an idea.
Oh, yeah?
I have an idea. I'm going to thank the donors of the day. I want you to compose yourself.
I'm composed.
I want you to think of exactly how you want to say this in an economical way. And then, so you have about, I'd say, a minute and a half to figure that out. And then I'll just play this instrumental version of Dirt Off Your Shoulder by Jay-Z. I'm going to assume it's probably like the karaoke version of Dirt Off Your Shoulder. And I want to thank Angela Anderson of Seattle, Washington, Steve Corley of Bellevue, Washington, Jillian Lamont of Sammamish, Washington, Annette Melton of Burien, Washington, beautiful Burien, Deadly Patusik of Naugatuck, Connecticut. That name's come through before, and I believe we commented on that. There's a lot going on. Potusik of Naugatuck. Naugatuck. I just wondered if it was one of those towns in the Northeast where it's like, you know, it looks like one thing, like Worcester. Yeah. All Worcester jokes aside, I know that we definitely spent some time on the town of Naugatuck last time through. So Deadly, thank you so much. And Barbara Arrowsmith of Indianola, Washington. Barb Arrow. Long, 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 long time listener to the show, or at least long time donor. Thank you, Barbara. I really appreciate it. Nice to see your name there. Barbara, Dadley, Annette, Jillian, or maybe you go by Gillian, Steve, and Angela. Thank you for supporting TBTL. Thank you for donating. Thank you for making the show possible. Had a very important call yesterday related to the upcoming TBTL-a-thon, which will be at the very end of May this year, and it's going to be exciting, y'all. It's going to be really exciting. And I can't wait to tell you what we're going to do. And and can't wait for that week when we remind everyone that TBTL only exists because of listener donations. So thank you very much, Angela, Steve, Jillian, Annette, Dadley, and Barbara. So this is, I thought this was like the karaoke version, but this is way too much background rapping. I can't figure out what the purpose of that song would be.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do know that sometimes when they have quote-unquote instrumentals, they will keep, like, the backing tracks in, which, again, I'm not sure. I guess it's just for if you want to, like, use it as to remix or something, not necessarily use it as bed music for a public radio podcast.
Right.
But it is, but then always makes me wonder, wait, is that really, those aren't the original backup vocals, though, are they? Or they just sound weird?
No, they sound naked? Too corny.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that this is probably a karaoke. I clearly downloaded some kind of Jay-Z karaoke situation. I don't think for performing. I hope anyway. I hope to gosh. I think that this is just so that when you get into the chorus. Sorry. No. I think that what it is so on certain lines when there's supposed to be two people like talking, what I mean? Like doubling up on a line. That's what that's for. Okay. After that, after thanking the donors of the day, after listening to some Jay-Z karaoke music, could you update us, sir, on the story yesterday of photographing a car that was taking up three spaces in the parking lot of the Whole Foods, and then the guy kind of pursued you afterwards, the guy who was the owner of the car?
Yeah, I saw this car, and I took a photo of it. It was just parked straight across, like parallel parked across three parking spots, and I saw it going into the grocery store. It made me mad. It seemed rude. And then I saw it again coming out of the grocery store, so I took a photo of it so that I could, I don't know, do what with it. I didn't want to post it online, but I just wanted documentation of people being rude, I guess.
I know that feeling. Carrie will see me photographing something, and she'll go, I smell a tweet.
Yeah.
You know?
Because tweets don't smell.
Like, it's my thought is, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with this photo, but this is a weird moment in my mind, and I may want to have evidence of it later so I can write a fire tweet, is often what's going through my mind.
Yeah, and maybe even for me, I don't know. It might be that I want to tell you or Vives or somebody about it, then I can show the picture, which I did show you the picture yesterday. And I got to say, I will mention that I did take this photo of this car, and something that I'd always sort of fantasized about, while I was taking a picture of what I thought to be somebody's rude action, that person caught me taking a photo of them, and he said, why are you taking a photo of my car? And I didn't even realize he was in the frame, too. He must have walked up to his car, or maybe came out of his car while I was taking the photo. I don't know. And I just said, oh, yeah, because it's a nice car. It looks very polite, my point being, look at how rudely you parked, sir. And then I put my headphones back on, and I kept walking, and I heard him try to pursue me or continue the conversation by saying something like he wanted to engage further on this perceived act of rudeness on my part. But here's the deal that we talked about yesterday. This egregious parking job did happen in the Whole Foods parking lot, but near the back of the parking lot where there's some construction going on, and there's these big construction bins. Now, this was at the end of the day, like near the end of the workday when I first saw this happen 2 days ago. Yesterday, as soon as we got off the air around 10 a.m., I went back to Whole Foods to get some of that sweet, sweet hot food bar breakfast. I ate way too much eggs and sausage yesterday. But, you know, going at a different time of the day like that, there was still construction happening. There's much more of a kind of a buzzy vibe around that work area. And so I passed it again because I wanted to check out two things. Number one, you had mentioned one of these construction bins looked a little bit like it might have been an open top, like debris bin, like a dumpster, yeah. But like a giant dumpster, yeah. That would be like, I don't know, 10 feet tall or something. And I wanted to see, was it open at the top? Because you said maybe this was some guy just like kind of illegal dumping and you caught him and took a picture.
Maybe
of
that's why
that.
He was so kind of like freaked out and suspicious of your photographing him because you caught him in the act of doing something he wasn't really supposed to do.
Or, and my takeaway from that is even more just kind of like, well, listen, was this somebody really just going into Whole Foods and parking across three spots near the back of the parking lot so that nobody would get near their car and scratch it, which was my initial reaction? Or is this somebody actually working with the construction crew in some way who has something to do with whatever that work is going on there? So what I do this time is that photo I took is kind of looking at the back of the construction area. But yesterday, while there are construction workers kind of buzzing around and stuff, I walk in the front. I walk right through the thick of everything. And I'm thinking, if this guy is somebody who is on site here and he sees me, I'm dressed exactly the same way. I'm carrying the same shopping bag. I got my same headphones on, same everything.
Ooh.
We could be looking at confrontation on day two. And so I'm walking by. I'm actually finding myself getting more nervous than I thought I would. But I just keep walking by at a brisk pace. Number one, the construction bin was open at the top. And it was indeed, when I passed it yesterday, open on the side too. So I could got a great view of it. It was a debris bin. So point to Luke on that. Where's my bell? And then
Way ahead of you.
Yeah. And then so now I'm walking through and people are kind of, you know, buzzing by me, carrying boards, doing whatever. I think I saw three stooges. One of them turned around carrying the board, bonked the other one in his head. It was very exciting. But what car do you think I saw parked in one of the slots near all the construction? The black.
Wow.
Nissan.
The Nissan?
I knew, you know, I was like 80% knowing that I was in the wrong yesterday, and when I passed that Nissan, I was just like, this guy just works here. He had to park in this way because he's working on the construction thing. Like, they probably weren't even considering this part like Whole Foods parking at this point because, you know, maybe because there's so much stuff going on. And for whatever reason, this worker had to park his car here, and all traditional parking rules were off for this section of the lot. And that is definitely what the case was. And luckily, I did not see him again. He did not see me. I saw that Nissan. I kept walking, and then I took a different route home.
Okay, a couple things. We may have to cancel Laundry Talk because this is way juicier to me. One, I totally get why you sort of had a building sense of nervousness. I would have been, again, for all my sort of confrontational ways. That's why U2 wrote that song, He Moves in Confrontational Ways, mm-hmm. about me, off of the Zooropa record.
Great era.
For all my confrontational style at times, I would have been totally freaking out internally that I'm going back to where this conflagration happened and this guy's going to walk out and now it's going to be a whole thing. So that makes sense to me. Two, was the Nissan in question again parked in this way where they're taking up multiple spaces?
No, it was just parked more properly in a slot, okay. in a parking spot. But it was very clear that
point,
now it was like closer to the construction, all of that.
So maybe you had a positive impact because, let me say this, I'm going to find a way,
Andrew,
that maybe you did some good in the world.
Gentleman has
like,
the
okay,
floor.
Fine. It is the I thank the gentleman from Ohio, and I will reserve the balance of my time. Wait, the government shut down. What are we doing here? Even though that parking area is part of the construction zone, sort of. You mentioned that the rest of the Whole Foods parking lot was pretty full yesterday,
yes.
or the day that you went in there. So, I I've seen the photo. It's not marked as like this is for parking if you are associated with this construction project. And I think it's very intentional that these bins they're set up in such a way that they left these parking spaces open. And I'm sure that was a negotiation with the property manager or the Whole Foods or someone. And it was because parking in Seattle is at a premium. So you kill three or four parking spaces in a busy Whole Foods, and you've done some damage to their business. So it's not an accident that those bins were oriented the way they were, meaning there is some expectation of people being able to park there. And meaning that this guy made the decision unilaterally that he was just going to hog three parking spaces. Instead of whatever construction business he had to do, he could have still parked in one space. And done his construction business. And now you see him parked not in the same way. And I bet you anything he did it because of the handsome young stranger in the headphones scurrying away from him like a rat who said, "What a polite car."
I did take some time yesterday to take some more photos of the car from all angles.
Okay, good.
And then I was like,
lens.
You're right. And then I was like, you know, I can't use these anywhere. That'd be public shaming. So then I called up a court reporter and had her meet me, or I'm sorry, one of those court sketchers to sketch what the situation is like. That way I could, you know, post it, but maintain a certain amount of decorum.
Have I given you my riff on that whole thing? I'm sure I have. Like, it makes no sense to me that the current rule is no cameras in the courtroom, but what we can have is an unflattering drawing.
Yeah, it doesn't totally – I guess it's the like, distraction of the cameras, right? I mean, it's an old rule, and it was probably like the actual – not what comes out of the courtroom, but what goes into the courtroom. And so this idea of having a lot of cameras –
you have a way of really blowing my mind sometimes, Walsh. I hadn't thought about that. I had always assumed it was from a privacy angle. Like, we don't want pictures of this – intense moment, which I could kind of understand, although it's not very transparent, but I could kind of understand that, except then it's like, but you can do a drawing of them?
Yeah, yeah. So I wonder.
Right.
I
mean, the camera's back.
I'm freelancing because I don't really know. I don't have any inside scoop on that, but it might also be a combination of both. But I just always think it has something to do with like judges, you know, maybe especially back in the day, not wanting disturbances in their courtroom. That's how judges talk. I apologize to all the judges listening.
Like, you're doing the judge from I guess the judge on Good Good Place is Maya Rudolph.
Yeah.
Whoever the other guy is. I think his name is Mark Jackson in real life. He collaborates with Paul F. Tompkins all the time, by the way. But
the redheaded fella, the guy who's also in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
He's a very serious guy who's kind of like I don't know if he's God, but he's in charge of everything.
Yeah, I think we're talking about the same guy. But I caught up on that yesterday, and we don't have to go off on this. I'm just going to state the fact that we like to state every now and then to make sure that the world is in the right place. Maya Rudolph, goddamn national treasure, man. She's in the latest episode again, and just
why is she not hosting the Oscars?
I don't know.
Like. Possibly with Amy Poehler, possibly solo. Like, every time Maya Rudolph and Amy Poehler show up at one of those shows, it's always the best part of the show. They don't have a host. It was going to be Kevin Hart. I stand by – this is not where I want to go with this, but I ultimately stand by my position that nobody challenged me on, for the record. I'm shadowboxing here, but I stand by my position that Kevin Hart's apology left me – was less than satisfactory to me. I mean, in as much as anyone needs to apologize for anything, I just thought the narrative around that was he had tweeted and made some jokes that were not cool. About, you know, being upset if his son were to want to, I think, play with dolls or something. This is clearly basically a homophobic or possibly transphobic joke. And his argument was, I've talked about it enough. I've apologized for it enough. I'm done apologizing. And my thought was like, dude, just say, yeah, that was dumb of me, and then go host the Oscars. And people were like, well, he's apologized. He doesn't want to talk about it anymore. And I was like, no, he's digging his heels in on this thing. And I feel like now ultimately, what people are saying, again, to the degree anyone's talking about it, is, yeah, he didn't apologize for it. Or at least he would not. It was like that, kind of like being a little kid. And I have been that little kid many times where you just dig in on something. And he's trying to semantically say, well, I've already apologized for it, therefore I'm done apologizing over it. And it's like, well, that's a form of not apologizing, if you ask me.
And I feel like his initial reaction before he apologized was, I'm not apologizing for this. People say bad shit in their past, don't you idiots know that people can grow and evolve? Which actually I think is I do think that that can be part of the conversation, but you don't lead with that and say, I'm not going to apologize for this really shitty thing I said or the things I said. Like, you can say, yeah, I do apologize for that, but I'm also like, we're evolving as a society. I'm evolving as a person. I was behind the curve on this, and I'm super embarrassed about it now. I have to live with the fact that that stuff is out there, but my comedy is evolving. That's not who I am anymore, and I'm glad I have a better outlook on the world now. Like, that's all you have to
and
say.
And I think it would be like, yeah, he would be like, you know, everybody would embrace him. I mean, my issue with Kevin Hart is I don't think his comedy is actually funny. But yeah, the world would be more than ready to be like, cool, go host the Oscars. Like, I don't think there are very, very many comedians. Look, I on this show for the longest time was decided that the hill I wanted to die on was that the word gay should no longer refer to people who are gay, but should be something you can use to talk about things that are to you not to your liking. Why I thought that was an argument that I needed to try to make and win and prevail on is so dumb of me. Anyway, most people who are talking into microphones or performing in any kind of free associative way have lots of things that do not stand up well over time. And so anyway, I don't know why I'm digressing on Kevin Hart, but all that to say, Maya Rudolph, the best. I agree. And I would watch her host the opening of a taxslayer.com location. Trying to think of the last place I'd want to go. I don't understand why. I mean, maybe she didn't want to do it as part of it. But anyway, okay. So
do you know that there was a big call though? Because she and Tiffany Haddish, and I don't even follow this stuff, but I think I was talking about it on the show when you were out. Her and Tiffany Haddish presented an award, I want to say last year or 2 years ago at the Oscars. So
yeah,
there's a lot of people who are like, have those two. They had so much charisma. Let them do it together.
Yes. Why not? Tiffany Haddish seems very likable as well. Like, turn them loose. Like, what is the fear around what it would be boring? Have you seen the Oscars? Yeah. They're mostly boring. I mean, I know you're a noted person of non-interest when it comes to those kinds of things, those award shows. But it's like, what is the worst thing that could happen if you put some kind of people who are not typically tasked with hosting these shows as the hosts? I mean, even there was one year where they had James Franco and I believe it was
the young woman who was in The Intern. Anne Hathaway, yes.
Anne Hathaway hosted, and James Franco was being his normal bizarro self, and everyone was like, that was a disaster. But everybody talked about it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at the end of the 7 hours of this thing, it was like, okay, I don't know. They gave the Oscars away to some people at the Academy Awards. It was nice. The world kept spinning. You know, what could go super wrong if you had Maya Rudolph and Tiffany Haddish host it, is my opinion.
I assume that maybe they can't get them first. I mean, who knows what the machinations are.
I also said, I think on Wait or something, I just put the award on a Roomba and send it out. And like, people have to chase it around on the stage. Oof. And if you catch it, you get to have an Oscar.
That would make headlines.
I would watch that.
Yeah. I think. Really? Hey, I just thought of something that I know that you want to move on to. So let me lay this on you, and we could do it now, or maybe we could save it for tomorrow's show. So we have something to talk about. It's a little bit late, though, but something happened on SNL this last week, and they must be back from their break, that seems. I don't know if it's right to say it's TBTL-y, but they broke format in a way and that seemed scripted, but more conversational, a little bit different. It was Pete Davidson brings on John Mulaney.
John Mulaney talking about the mule.
Yeah, did you watch it?
I did.
Oh, okay. Then maybe we don't have to play it now. Listeners can check it out themselves. I wanted to make sure you saw it because I thought basically it's like a weekend update thing. The Mule is a movie directed by Clint Eastwood and starring Clint Eastwood, and it sounds just ridiculous. And they just decide, I mean, it has the vibe of these guys actually did see the movie, maybe even actually together, and they were just riffing about it, talking about how terrible it was. And they said, hey, man, Pete said, hey, man, I can get you on SNL. Can we just like write this out and do our review of this movie? And did you like it? I actually watched it twice. I was sort of fascinated by the format.
I did. I found it. I was. How do I put this? I did like it, and I thought it was funny, and I love that they just zeroed in on a couple pieces of minutia from the film. And I loved the different energy between John Mulaney and Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
I did at the end wonder if Pete Davidson is like doing okay. Maybe he just has a, I don't know, even know what generation Pete Davidson is in.
He's 25.
Why don't we do this? Let's look. What's that?
He's 25. I don't know if you mean generation, like how old he is, but
yeah, I guess I just mean like maybe it's just generationally a way that people talk now. But it was like he seemed. It's just a way. It's like John Mulaney is on camera and talking to the camera in a way that makes sense to me based at my with my age and experience. Oh, sorry, I got a couple updates there. We're getting paid by our employers tomorrow. Thanks again to the donors of the day.
Nice.
And I'm supposed to intermittently fast tomorrow. Just update from my life because my computer is plugged into the soundboard. Anyway, let's do this. I think it's an interesting topic, and I think it's good tape. So why don't we plan on talking about that on tomorrow's show?
That
and
sounds
like
good.
You said, if the listeners want to go do a little, this is a show that does assign homework.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go watch that, from what I heard, excuse me, that was also the best part of the show. I did not watch the rest of it. I feel like this season has been pretty bad on SNL, and I don't know why that is. But I heard that was the real highlight of the show. I did watch it. But if you want to go watch it, and then we'll talk about it tomorrow. I'm talking to listeners now, of course. Let's do that because there's a lot there.
All right, I know you know about TBTL the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
Great story in the New York Times by Thomas Rogers, Dateline Berlin. One afternoon in November, Hans-Jürgen Topf walked through the backstage area of the Mercedes-Benz Arena, where dozens of crew members were unloading the equipment for the final stop of U2's Experience Plus Innocence tour. After enthusiastically greeting and hugging several of the workers, Topf, age 62, came to a sweltering room filled with humming washing machines and dryers. "This is my life," he said. "The artists live their life, and I live my laundry life." Thus begins the story of this German dude who has become known as the person to go to if you have laundry needs during your rock and roll tour. His company is actually called Rock and Roll Laundry. And Topf
refers to himself in the third person as Der Topft. Like, he calls himself, like, the way that David Hasselhoff calls himself the Hoff, this guy calls himself the Topf.
That is a flag. First of all, I didn't know that David Hasselhoff calls himself that. I just heard other people call him that. But yeah, referring to yourself in the third person beyond maybe one sentence that you're saying as a lark is definitely a red flag.
Yeah, David Hasselhoff, I think he may have had a website or even a some kind of TV show. He was very into this idea of don't hassle the Hoff.
Mm-hmm.
He would talk about not hassling the Hoff. By the way, David Hasselhoff, because this is Germany and David Hasselhoff is a huge musical star in Germany, as in he's a recording star. I don't believe he stars in musicals, although I would see him in Dear Evan Hansen. Shout out to our theater people who got that joke. David Hasselhoff does show up in this article somewhere because this guy, Der Topf, has worked with him. I can't find the exact reference here. I'm sure I'll see it as I get further into the story. But this guy basically starts out, his parents have a laundromat in Berlin. And Ted Nugent's tour bus, this is years and years ago, was apparently lost driving around Berlin. And Der Topf happened to just be like on the street. And the tour bus driver asked for directions. Now, if Der Topf was a real hero, he would have just directed the Nugent tour bus over the edge of hell. But he didn't. He apparently told them where the arena was. And they rewarded him by giving him two free tickets to the Ted Nugent show, which he then goes to. He then somehow makes conversation with the tour manager and says, "Do you guys have any laundry needs?" And the guy says, "Yeah, actually, we got a bunch of dirty laundry." Gives it to the guy. Der Topf takes the laundry back to his parents' laundromat, washes it all, and it comes back super clean and perfectly folded. And this tour manager is like, "Holy S, this is great!" Because it turns out this article kind of details. Having clean laundry on tour is like a real challenge. A lot of times it involves somebody just going to a laundromat in whatever the town is and then like half drying the stuff before running back to the tour bus before it leaves. So this was a need that needed to be filled, and Der Topf filled it by becoming the go-to person for doing laundry when you came through Berlin, which has now grown into him being the go-to person on your tour. Like, he will be hired. Blue Oyster Cult has hired him, as we mentioned. Hasselhoff has hired him. Joe Cocker and many others. Janet Jackson, to basically be the laundry person who travels around with the band, making sure all of their laundry gets washed, folded, and maybe most importantly, ironed. He said sometimes he washes laundry for 20 hours a day. He says the ironing is his least favorite part of the job, which I found oddly life-affirming. Had he been like, "No, man, the ironing is great. I love it. I could do that for 8 hours. I would be like, "What's wrong with this dude?" But I liked knowing and finding out that he also doesn't like ironing, Andrew.
Yeah, I got to say, as much as I like cleaning and I like having clean clothes and I like puttering around, the idea of doing somebody else's laundry does not appeal to me at all. And I don't know if it's something about like – there's something very evocative about saying, "I just washed the pants of somebody from the Blue Oyster Cult." Like, for some reason, that sounds really gross to me. Grosser than, like, washing, like, a football player's pants. And it's like, ugh, I don't want to be I'm just picturing leather and sweat and grossness and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, don't fear the leather.
Yeah. That's a good Blue Oyster Cult joke. So, yeah, that doesn't appeal to me. In doing laundry myself, though, Genevieve has pointed this out. It's odd, given my kind of persnicketiness and the way I like things to be just so in some cases, that I don't like ironing more. I think I would like ironing more if it was just slightly easier, because I like an ironed shirt. I mean, it's the ultimate in puttering, but I find it so frustrating, like wrapping presents. Like, I'm I'm now a middle-aged man, and I still cannot get ironing down or wrapping presents. They always end up feeling like I'm a child, and I can't do it right. Like, I'll iron one side of the shirt, everything's fine, and then I look, oh, I made four creases on the back. I try to fix those. I'm just, like, constantly flipping the same shirt over and over and over again, trying to get it perfect. And maybe that's what my problem is. Maybe there is no perfectly ironed shirt that isn't done by a machine.
Well, Der Topf, I think, could get pretty close, considering that he does iron for sometimes 4 to 5 hours a day. Let me just I don't think I'm the like ironing expert, and this did come up on our advice radio show that we pitched to WBUR. How'd that go?
I was going to ask you. I'm not exactly sure. When do we debut? I'll look on the calendar.
Soon, I think. Yeah, actually, I meant to tell you. We got to get on that. Mm-hmm. But I know I talked about ironing on that show, so I apologize if this is redundant. But I end up ironing a lot of shirts because what I learned at one point, or what I decided with the travel, was either I'm going to constantly be carrying around some garment bag in the hopes of keeping shirts that are ironed, or I'm going to just assume that when I show up at a hotel, I'm going to have some ironing to do, because it's so much easier to transport shirts in your packet. And there's, you know, there's this idea that you might be able to fold a shirt in such a way that it doesn't need to be ironed, but it doesn't take that long to iron it, and so I just sort of build it into my night. Usually this is my thing. I get into the hotel. I put on some kind of television on the hotel TV that I find moderately interesting. And then I just, you know, I spend 15 or 20 minutes to actually iron all the shirts that I will wear during that leg of the trip. So I get it done all at once. Now, I know this has to do with traveling as opposed to being at home, but I think the same rules apply. I think we feel daunted by ironing laundry, because if we pull a giant laundry mountain out of the dryer and then throw it on a bed or on a chair or something, it's just intimidating and unfun. What I would argue is, again, no one asked me this, but this is what I would say you do. If you have a laundry mountain and it feels intimidating because it feels like ironing all of those shirts or whatever is just going to take you forever and it's drudgery, hang it all up. Don't iron it. Hang it up. And then when you need to wear the shirt, iron it. So you're not trying to take on the whole thing at once. You just – because the issue is it's in a pile somewhere, and that just is not a good feeling. So and it feels weird to hang up wrinkly laundry. It's fine. Hang it up. Put it in your closet. Put it away. And then when you pull it out to use it – I mean, this takes a little forethought. But ideally what you'll do is you'll be like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to wear that shirt. So now I know I need to iron that shirt either tonight or tomorrow. That would be the home version of this whole strategy. But what I was going to say is specifically.
Can I just say, though,
that
I found that very unrelatable. I would never leave my clean clothes just in a pile. I mean, maybe T-shirts and underwear, you can leave them in the basket for a while until you fold them. But any kind of a button-down shirt, when I take it out of the laundry or – well, often – you know what? Often I'm hanging it to dry. I don't usually tumble dry maybe my button-down shirts. But, yeah, usually my waiting line for ironing is hanging clothes. I wouldn't even know where to keep a big pile of clean but unhanging shirts.
Oh, my friend. I think that gets to your – I mean, and that's awesome. I'm happy for you, and I don't mean that sarcastically. I would say that on the relatable side of this, I think a lot of listeners can relate to the idea of you pull the laundry out of the dryer, you put it in a pile, and you're like, I'm going to fold all of that right after I do this one thing, and then it's a week later and you've just been pulling clothes off of the laundry pile. I think that is a very – I mean, not everybody, but I know there are a lot of people that can relate to that way of doing things, even though you're right, it makes less sense. Ideally, what you would do is pull everything out from the dryer, and when you pull it out of the dryer, you are then hanging it and putting it away so it doesn't even need to be ironed potentially. Like that's – but I do know for a fact that people can get – intimidated by Laundry Mountain, and it eventually creates its own gravitational pull, so more things start getting attached to it, and it just can become a little depressing, I think. That being said, what I was going to say about ironing is, and this is what I said during our radio audition, was one of the things is people should get the iron hotter than they think. You're not going to burn through your clothes. That was in a movie one time. I don't remember what movie, but probably a lot of them, and I think we all got scared that we were going to show up with our like rayon shirt on with the exact outline of an iron on it because we had left the iron on it too long. That's generally not going to happen. If you get nervous, just apply steam to the situation. If you're like, can this shirt take the iron? Just use a lot of the steam. The other thing is start at the back of the shirt. This would be my advice. Iron the parts of the shirt that are going to be most outward facing, as it were, last. Because sometimes, same thing with pants. Like, okay, with pants, sometimes you can't iron the back and front of pants without one of them getting a weird crease because there's something about the pressing down. You know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
Okay, sometimes if you iron – same thing goes for a shirt. It can be difficult to iron, let's say, the front of a sleeve on your shirt without it kind of putting some kind of crease or oddness on the back of the sleeve.
Oh, yeah.
So then you flip it over and you iron the back of the sleeve and now the front of the sleeve is not great.
Yes, of course, yeah.
And it kind of – like it's same thing for pants sometimes. And so basically like what I'm saying is I always do the back of everything first. Because I figure, I don't know, if I got a weird crease on the back of my sleeve, that's less problematic to me than on the front of my sleeve or on the front of my shirt. So I do the back of everything first so that the last pass is on the front. I think of that as the part of me that's being presented to the world more obviously. And so if I have to decide between the front or back of the sleeve working, I'm going to choose the front of the sleeve working. So I get the iron really hot. I put on some TV I want to watch, and I always iron back to front. Those are the things that I do. Again, I don't think I'm the world's expert on this, but I do think I'm a fairly effective ironer at this point in my life. And you're right, Andrew. I would expect you to really like revel in the kind of zen and the perfectionism of ironing. I would expect you to be a world-class ironer, knowing you.
Even like I have weird things about laundry. I did this two Saturdays ago. I had like a full on cleaning day, which I do sometimes. I'm trying to get better about not letting messes build up or even the bathroom so that I then have to like blank out an entire Saturday and say it's cleaning day. But every now and then you do have to do that. Our bathroom was getting really bad. So it's like, well, if I'm going to start pulling out all this cleaning stuff, you end up kind of cleaning a big chunk of the house, which I did on Saturday. And I love that. And as somebody who's been a renter his whole life, living in a place where I have a washer and dryer right off of my kitchen in their own little room, it's like the best laundry situation I've ever lived with before because it's right here, it's right accessible, but it's also totally hidden away from any guests. Like, do you even know where our washer and dryer is? Did you know that we have one?
No, in fact, I didn't, and I have not seen it.
Yeah, it's great. It's a little door off of our kitchen. Then if you open it, it's a tiny little laundry room in there. It's perfect. The reason I bring it up is not just to brag about my awesome laundry room, but just to say that like that is such a treat and a delight to somebody who used to have to block out days and say, okay, it's going to take about a half hour to collect all of our laundry, then let's say 10 minutes to drive to the laundromat, and then the first round is going to take, 30 minutes, and then maybe an hour to drive. Like, I would have to schedule, big chunks of a weekend day just to get out of the house and do laundry, and then you can't really multitask. I mean, we would go get something to eat or bop around town a little bit maybe during the dry cycle, but it just sort of felt like wasting time. So I love this ability I have now to like clean the whole house, clean the bathroom, and while I'm doing that, hearing those gentle machines whirring away and knowing that I'm also getting something done in that room, like that is a very satisfying aspect of washing clothes to me. And then for the majority of clothes, by the way, just to clarify, I guess I was just a little bit confused. I very much know the idea of pulling clothes off of the clean basket, and I'll go sometimes a week doing that. But that, like I say, is always just like our stuff that I put in the dryer, and maybe it's because I never put button-down shirts in the dryer. I let them hang to dry. So
really?
That's just part. So that makes sense. That's why that's why there's a little disconnect in my brain there, is because I think in my head I shrunk a shirt one time or something, but I have it in my head that you're always supposed to like let the button-down shirts dry while hanging. So that's kind of, if I am doing those.
Does that mean that you don't then – do they not need ironing if they dry while hanging, or are they usually
– No, they okay. Then they will need to then be ironed out, certainly, because they'll dry. Here's the real thing though, and this isn't really helpful to this conversation. I also in the past 5 to 10 years have just – gotten more and more comfortable just taking all of any button-down shirt I have, any hanging clothes that I have. I just collect it all and I take it to the dry cleaners and I say, launder this, and then it comes back perfectly ironed. So that's how I do it the majority of the time. But if I am washing my own button-down shirts, I usually pull them out of the washing machine first, hang them up, and put the rest in the dryer. But anyway, all that is to say, given all of my fastidiousness and my putteringness and all of these things, I like the act of having clothes washing and drying while I'm doing other things. That's very satisfying to me. But the act of folding clothes, I really hate, especially other people's clothes. Like, I have an understanding with Genevieve now that I'll do all of the laundry mostly. And she has some special things that she likes to do because I also just treat laundry very bluntly. I don't separate colors. I just don't think life is that complicated.
I think if you wash in cold, you're fine. Now, listeners will weigh in on this, but like you can wash. I mean, again, it's like I said about the ironing. There's like a scene in a movie where someone's like burned an iron imprint on a shirt. There's also the scene in the movie where everything's pink because you washed it with the wrong color. Most of the time, and if you just use cold, it's fine. I do tend to separate when I do the laundry. Carrie does more of the laundry than I do, but I think we're a little precious about that stuff sometimes.
Yeah, and again, keep in mind, if most of my button-down shirts are out of the equation because I'm taking them to the dry cleaner around the corner, and then I only wash my jeans every now and then, mostly what we're talking about here is, you know, T-shirts that I wear underneath other things and unmentionables and socks. And by the way, they are unmentionable. So for me, I'm not going to get really fussy.
Oh, I've seen them.
Oh, yeah.
They should be called "You Can't Unsee Them-ables."
Yes. So it's a pretty low bar for me just to dump everything in there and wash it. And then I will fold my own clothes coming up, but I don't even bother folding Genevieve's clothes anymore. Women's clothes are too small. They don't fold. Like, again, my system is very, very, very basic. And then I start getting into all these other weird clothes. I don't know how to fold her stuff, and I hate it. I hate folding other people's clothes, so I just put hers in a basket and say, "This is for you." That sounds terrible.
I have, we have a kind of an unwritten rule in this house that, like, whoever happens to be doing the laundry, and when it comes out of the dryer, you just fold all the clothes for both people, and I actually find it to be a love language, like, subtly, you know, like. What I like, there have been times where Carrie and I are in a fight and I come home and my laundry is folded, as is her laundry, because it came out of the dryer. And I was like, that's really sweet. That's like a really nice thing to have, even when we're annoyed with each other. So I try to remember to sort of take that approach, because like you want to, what I'm saying now, it totally sounds like I'm like subtweeting your relationship, Andrew, and I don't mean to be, because obviously you and Vives are crazy about each other. But I like the fact that in our house, the deal is you have to try to do the other person's laundry too, as a sign of like we're in this together. But I don't know how to fold any of Carrie's stuff. She probably has to refold it. I have no idea what I'm doing. And again, not to get into to overly personal thing, but there's just a lot of items of clothing for females that are a mystery to me as to how they are folded, and particularly things in the undergarment variety.
Yeah.
I'm like, where? And I'm not trying to be like a comedy bit from Reader's Digest, but like, seriously, what end it goes up on this thing that I'm holding now? And like, I personally go through the effort of doing it, even if it's not helpful, literally because I'm trying to be like, well, she folds my stuff, so here's this, you know what I mean? And I know, by the way, you do the dishes at your house, you do tons of things, so this is not me trying to indicate anything about your relationship.
Yeah, I think everybody's just got their...
We've evolved a different system here.
Exactly, everybody's got their things. I mean, there was a time when, like, especially when doing the laundry was more of a pain in the butt, I would definitely be the one who would say, okay, you know, I wrapped up work and now I'm taking all of this laundry and I'm putting it in my car and I'm taking it somewhere and I'm going to a laundromat and I'll be back in 3 hours with a bunch of clean clothes. That usually fell to me during a certain era. And then the unsaid kind of agreement was, and I don't even think we talked about it, is I did all of that and then I'd bring it home and then Genevieve would fold it all. And then I don't know, things just now were things evolve. Here we are. I don't mind folding my own BS stuff because, like I say, it's really, really basic now. So in a certain way, it's like I still mostly do the laundry, but it's not that hard to do because I'm doing it around the house. But actually, I've taken something off of Genevieve's plate, which is folding my clothes at all. And yeah, and it's just like we have this distribution of labor that is, little, you know, whatever. Just I do like the fact that we've been in a relationship for so long that I don't even know that we've ever really – we've talked about this stuff like kind of post facto, but we never set up rules. We just found our – watermark, our high watermark, is that the right way of putting it? We just found our level of things just have
settling point.
Yeah, or settling point or whatever. Things just shook out in a way that it's like, oh yeah, Veeves does all the paperwork now. I used to do all the bills. For some reason, she does them all now. I don't know why. We never talked about it. It just evolved that way. Like there are other things that she does and certain things that I do. And again, we never set out the rules, but they are what they are and they seem to be okay for now.
I like... Boy, I'll tell you, when I'm trying to remember what house it would have been, because I went through a lot of my life without having, you know, laundry facilities in the house I was living in, and or actually really more what it was, I was pretty lucky. I think early on my apartment buildings might have had laundry, but it was like in the scary basement the apartment building.
Yeah, that.
And that would be a whole thing, because there's the whole, that dynamic of like going down and then someone has jumped the line or put their stuff in, or, you know, there's just all that stuff around when there's like one washing machine, one dryer, and an apartment building of 20 or 30 units. Like that drama I don't miss at all. But what I really like, and this is kind of just, I guess, agreeing with what you said, sometimes what I try to use laundry time as, I consider it to be sort of brackets on a bunch of other stuff that I need to do. So in other words, I'll be sitting there going like, I got 20 things I'm supposed to do right now, like, you know, house things, yard things, and laundry is maybe one of them. And I'm like, okay, this is how this is going to work. I'm going to put the laundry in the washing machine. That begins now the time of this day that I'm doing things. And like, I'm going to go around and do all this other stuff, and then the stuff's going to be done in the washer, throw it in the dryer, keep doing things. And when the laundry's done in the dryer, then it's time to pull it out and fold it and deal with it. And it's almost like something about starting that process going helps me get motivated to do other things I have to do. And then it's all done, and then I'm like, oh, phew, I got that done. Like, it's when I'm looking at a day of a bunch of things and I can't quite figure out how I'm going to tackle them all, if laundry's on the list, that's where I start. That's the snowball rolling down the hill, very small at the top and hopefully getting bigger by the bottom and getting all this stuff accomplished.
Yeah, I can see that. We have various tasks like that in our life. I feel like sometimes it's hard to say that – putting laundry aside, but let's say I'm sitting down to do something. Maybe I have a more of a long-term project. I hate long-term projects. Like, I put them off and I put them off. And, like, here's a perfect example. I had stuff that I needed to be working on last week and early this week, but I got a note from the folks at American Public Media, our fine employer, saying, hey, we haven't been – you don't even know about this, Luke, but there's a system of archiving the shows at APM, not just posting them online, but actually there is an official APM archive, and all of our stuff is supposed to live in there. And if we have higher quality files than we post, we're supposed to send them that. But I have never gotten into a good rhythm with them on it, because we were using Dropbox for a while, and then my Dropbox was filling up, and then my phone stopped uploading. It was just a whole thing. And late last week, I got an email from one of the archivists there that said, we're giving you the keys to the kingdom. If you use your special computer, you can just get into the system and upload everything yourself. And I'm like, that is sweet, because that is a task that is based fully in minutia. I love the idea of archiving things. I'm going to go through, you know, I have a file folder for every single show that you and I do. That includes the original file, our edited files, show pick, and whatever else is in there. So I had about 6 to 7, maybe more, months of shows that I needed to archive. So instead of doing any of the stuff that actually needed to get done, like, I have no idea what the purpose of archiving these things are, other than like for posterity, when they celebrate 100 years of Minnesota Public Radio and they want our show to be front and center as sort of the...
You don't think that this... all of this is going to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, my friend?
Right, exactly. When APM finally pens their deal with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because we are the Rock and Roll, we are the U2 of podcasters.
Clear out the sarcophagus in the bottom of that pyramid in Cleveland. Yeah. TBTL's coming home.
By the way, you better hope that you die first, because I don't know if you know this, but it's in my contract that if I die first, you get buried with me in the sarcophagus.
That's okay. You know what? Honestly, we've had a good run. I'm fine with that.
So anyway, point is, I spent, some chunks of time, not tons of time, but like there was stuff I could have been doing, but it was I didn't want to sit down at my computer to do it. But for whatever reason, my brain being weird, I was like, ooh, that archiving project sounds fun and pretty pointless, but fun. So that got me sitting down behind my computer, and then I like started sorting out all the files and putting them in a special folder, and then that folder was ready to upload to APM Archives in a system called Eddy, by the way. They name all their systems. This one is called Eddy.
Huh. Well, to wrap things up on Der Top, the rock and roll laundry master of Berlin, a day in his life, he starts out washing in the morning the performer's clothes, which this is related to your hanging, Andrew, of your collared shirts. Usually the performer's clothes have to be air dried with a small fan. So just imagine this guy just like, with a small fan, applying it to these pieces of clothing. The most soiled garments he ever handled, he said, were coveralls worn by the metal band Slipknot.
Sounds right.
That had been sprayed with beer, cream, and fake blood, and left in garbage bags for 3 days.
Oh, God.
So that seems...
throw them away.
That seems to make sense to me that Slipknot's keeping their soiled coveralls or whatever in garbage bags. That seems about right. Although I do have this weird memory of like hearing one of the guys from Slipknot, like, I don't know if you know anything about this band. I think they're from Iowa. They wear masks. Their music is, let me just say, not for me. But I remember, I think, hearing or reading an interview with one of the main people in the band, and they were actually kind of thoughtful and normal. And I was like, oh, okay. And I also, on the Dan Le Batard show, heard the lead singer of the band Avenged Sevenfold, which also is not music for me. And he was very funny and likable. And that was, so I guess who knows, right? Like, sometimes these folks are, I think, kind of in on it, obviously. The David Hasselhoff
that
part
of this. They wore masks, by the way. I just got to say that. I always thought Slipknot was just like one of those hardcore post-grungy bands where
metal.
But I'm looking at photos. The latest headline about them from consequenceofsound.net is Slipknot are literally pouring their blood into recording new album. The drummer shares a pic of bloody drum set from the studio. I had no idea that's what Slipknot was all about.
That's their whole, like, their shtick is that no one's ever seen their faces, I think. And then I think it might have been a story when the main guy, for some reason my brain tells me the guy is named Corey. I don't know why my brain would remember that, and I don't even know if that's accurate.
Okay.
But anyway. The David Hasselhoff piece of this whole thing is that Der Toft once shrank a golden pair of David Hasselhoff's pants, and a mistake by a dry cleaner that Toft had hired once ruined a $3,000 vest belonging to Janet Jackson. But Der Toft is quick to point out, and let me just remind you, I believe he is talking about this in the third person. He is quick to point out that these mistakes are rare. Quote, Der Toft is mega reliable.
What it says on the
so
sign.
This guy talking about himself is referring. He says, yo, guys, I know we've had some mistakes. We shrunk Hasselhoff's pants. We ruined a vest of Janet Jackson's. But the Toft is reliable. In fact, mega reliable, people.
Mm-hmm. Their Toft does not live in the past.
No, that's right. Ever forward. He's got his son working on this project, too, by the way. His son helps him. And then there was a couple of other things that I was going to mention about this story, but I think you kind of get the idea. This is something I thought was kind of interesting. He said that over time, tours have become much more professional and business-oriented since when he began back in the, 80s or whatever. He said he used to find drugs in the clothes of the performers all the time, and he said, these days I'm more likely to find an herbal tea bag.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me
at all. I wonder if... Also, some of it might be that the bands he's touring with are just getting older and older.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That does make sense to me as well. Like the '80s, that whole like we're just gonna party like crazy, and like now, I mean, even the younger bands, trust me, I'm sure there are, I don't want to sound like a total naive person here. Obviously, there are tons of young musicians who are getting into the scene and are partying their damn heads off. They're partying their damn overalls off, in the case of Slipknot.
And then putting them in a garbage bag.
Can't you also just see, like, we're just so much more aware of things now? Like, I could just see a whole scene of somebody, like some young person going on tour, and instead of like partying with tons of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, being like, why are you running away from your feelings? Like, let's examine why you want to use sex, drugs, and rock and roll right now, and let's just talk about
right.
that.
Have you guys downloaded the Calm app?
Right.
Drake?
Exactly.
Have you thought about starting your day with some like meditation and a little the sound of a babbling brook? I know we definitely need to wrap things up here, but I think in a weird way, Der Top, even though he sounds like kind of a, you know, high on his own supply a little bit here, sounds a little cocky. Der Top just mega reliable, people. I do like the story that he just basically created this business for himself by just being on his grind. After the whole Nugent thing, he started standing outside of concert venues, quote, like a groupie, and offering same-day laundry service to visiting music acts, including Elton John and Blue Oyster Cult. And so, like, he would just be standing out there, but, like, instead of wanting an autograph or wanting to get backstage, he wanted to do the laundry of the bands coming through. And it worked, and he built this whole business out of it, which I do find kind of, like, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people might look at it and think this is, like, kind of, I don't want to say demeaning because it's honest work, but a lot of people wouldn't stand outside of the Blue Oyster Cult show or the Elton John show or the Harry Belafonte show, another singer that he helps out with this stuff. A lot of people just wouldn't go through all this, and he went through it, and he's clearly, I mean, maybe not the ironing part, but everything else, he's loving it, Jerry. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because, again, nothing demeaning about doing laundry for a living, whether you know, work at a dry cleaner or whatever, or in a hotel, and that's part of your deal. But this is just a weird intersection because you like to think of it, let's say, from his – you say he's got a son who's working with him now, and his son was maybe in high school. Yeah. Is it one of those things where you're proud and you want to brag because, like, hey, man, I got to see the Blue – Oyster Cult's leather pants yesterday. You want to see the Blue Oyster Cult's leather pants? I can show them to you. They're in my dad's office right now. Like, that's kind of weird. Or is it just kind of like, oh, dad, oh, you're just like doing these famous people's laundry? Like, I don't know. I'm just trying to think of it from like a teenager's perspective, how they take this whole thing in.
I have no insight into that in their specific relationship, but I would. There's one of two ways to go with that, right? You're either kind of embarrassed, and because all parents are embarrassing when you're a teenager.
Right.
Or you are just like, you're geeked about it. I heard the comedian Sebastian Maniscalco on the Howard Stern show, and he was talking about how, so by the way, Sebastian Maniscalco, to our listeners who don't know, is the guy who did the bit about Ross Dress for Less that we used to play
lot. Yeah. Yeah, I got that.
And that was, I mean, he was not like he wasn't not kind of famous or successful then, but like it's insane what's happened to him. He sold out like 3 or 4 nights in a row at Madison Square Garden recently. Like, he's really, and I assume, of course, that's the TBTL bump. So we'll wait for the check, Sebastian. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about his dad was a hairdresser when he was growing up. And Howard Stern was like, how did you feel about that? Because, you know, he's a sort of Italian kid. He was from Chicago, presumably. The sound of it was that he grew up in a pretty, I wouldn't say even working class, because I guess his dad made a pretty good living. But I don't know, dad as a hairdresser when you're like an Italian-American kid growing up in Chicago, feels like that could go either way. Like, what's your dad do? You know, he is a construction foreman. Or what does your dad do? He runs sanitation, which is code for who knows what. What's your dad do? He's a hairdresser. And I was expecting when Stern said, like, how'd you feel about that? I would have expected him to be like, yeah, it was a little kind of made me feel – threatened my masculinity. But Sebastian was like, it was the coolest – I thought it was the coolest freaking job he could have ever had. Like, and I was like, wow, okay, cool. I mean, I guess it all – I don't think I would have had the confidence as a kid if my dad was a hairdresser to lean into it. So I don't know why I brought that up. It just was surprising to me and kind of nice that he wasn't just like – you know, like I said, anything. My parent, I found my parents deeply and inherently embarrassing when I was a teenager, just because I think that's kind of the dynamic usually.
Yeah, I think so. I wonder though if his dad had been a like a construction worker or something, if his dad would have like just taken it upon himself to park across three different parking spaces instead of just finding one and parking his Nissan there. I'm just asking
questions. I'm coming down to, after this show, after this episode is put to bed, I'm actually going to jump in Notaro, the Tiguan that we have now, and drive down to Seattle. You and I are going to do some special recording for our upcoming Valentine's Month show. I'd like to mention to program directors, it's a radio special that works great throughout the month of February called Love is on the Air. But before I do that, I'm probably going to have to swing by that parking lot, see if I can find that guy, and then bring him down to the house. How are you going to feel if I walk through the door? It's me, my computer, and the guy in the Under Armour workout shirt from the parking lot.
Can I offer another plan? What if you and I get some hard hats, get some of those reflective vests? I have a pair of work boots in the closet here. Let's go undercover. Let's see what happens. We'll go get some. I mentioned the Three Stooges, kind of like the famous, you know, pratfall of spinning the board around and bonking each other in the head. We can do a safer version of that. I'll get some 2x4s. You can carry one end. I'll carry the other. We'll just walk quickly. We'll infiltrate, and we'll just get we'll earn the people's trust, the workers' trust, and we'll kind of get a feel for what the situation is. And then I would say after probably 6 months to a year of doing this and kind of ingratiating ourselves with these folks, then we can ask him, what were you thinking when you parked across three spots?
What about rakes? If there was a rake left on the job site,
how
do you think you would like to discover that rake?
How is it sitting? Is it laying on the ground?
It's laying down, and this is the worst part of it. The tines are facing up in a way that if you were to step on the edge of those, you could get a bonk on the nose.
Oh, no. That sounds rough. Okay.
What about lunchtime? There's nowhere to eat lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we eat lunch? Is there some kind of long, I don't know, metal kind of thing we could sit on?
I like having my feet dangle, because I don't know if you're talking about a bench, but I like the problem with a bench is your feet remain on the ground. I like sitting on something long and metal, but having my feet dangle. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It helps digestion. Okay.
It's good core workout. Would you like to have your lunch in such a way that you were utterly terrified for your life during every bite?
I know. I used to have, like so many people, I used to have that famous photo, like actually framed. I don't think it ever got hung up anywhere. I got it for a gift for Christmas one year, because I did, you know, that's a fascinating photo of those construction workers probably in the 40s, right, eating lunch on that really high beam. It is a fascinating photo. But, like, can you even freaking imagine? I wouldn't ever eat. If
it
I was
has
up that-
to be staged.
Oh, I don't think so.
Well, I mean, I assume, I mean, I think they're real construction workers, but like, so let's just, why are we doing this an hour, practically an hour and a half into the show? I just feel like, is that the only room there is to sit down on the whole construction site? Is that perilously high and dangerous I-beam?
I just always assumed, let's see here, it's called Lunch Atop a Skyscraper, is a photograph taken atop the steelwork of 30 Rock. Oh, it's from 30 Rock, 30 Rockefeller Center, during the construction of Rockefeller Center in Manhattan. So, yeah, I think it's real. I just think that people just,
I don't think it's staged like they weren't on the construction site or they didn't work there.
Oh.
I just wondered if it was like they were just naturally, like, really eating their lunch on that beam, or they kind of were posing for the picture. Somewhat knowingly, or
okay.
Like,
okay, all right. I'm sorry. I thought you meant the whole thing was just shopped, and I was like, that would surprise me. But I am looking at the Wikipedia page, and keep your bell handy because it says, according to archivists. By the way, I don't know if you know this. I'm kind of an amateur archivist. according to archivists, the photograph was in fact prearranged. Although the photograph shows real iron workers, it is believed that the moment was staged by Rockefeller Center to promote the new skyscraper.
Yeah, because my thought was there are – I mean, not only are there safer places to eat your lunch, but there's just more comfortable places. Really what made me think that was, how engaged would your core be the entire meal?
Yeah, right.
That?
Like, right.
You can't lean back. If you lean forward, you die. Well, if you lean back, you die. Like, just like constant tensing of your core. I was like, I bet you that those guys would like to just sit down on a little bit less – precarious place to just eat their what do you think they would in that day and age, trying to think of even what like a 1940s
bologna sandwich
would consist of. Some kind of bologna sandwich is exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I think I've proved everything that I wanted to prove about Snopesing photos from the construction of Rockefeller Center, and I think it is now time for us to wrap this show up, and then for me to drive to Seattle and me pick up my new friend, and then for us to come over to your house and then do some recording for Love Is on the Air. Did you happen to get any brilliant ideas, as my mom would say, scathingly brilliant ideas for a show title?
Oh, you said something at one point, and I didn't write it down. Later on, you said laundry life, so I wrote down my so-called laundry life, which I guess we could do.
Your so-called?
My so-called
laundry. What about my soap-called
My soap-called?
Does that even make sense?
Sure,
no.
I'd go with that.
What about some hassling the Hoff?
We'll figure it out. There was definitely something in
Der
there.
Der Toft is super, is mega reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Der Toft is, that's not even a saying. That's just a thing the guy said.
Yeah. I'm confident. But I like my soap called Laundry Life. That's that could work for me. What did I name it yesterday? I was proud because we didn't come up with something during the show, and then I came up with something afterwards that I was either proud of or ashamed of. I get them confused. It's like
I know. They're so close together on the spectrum of experiences. Hold on. I'm going to the
I got
going
it here.
To the page right now. You got it? What was it?
Only Fools Flush In. Because we were talking about flushness. Oh, so you like it. Okay. See, later on at night, I was thinking about it, and I guess I thought it should have just been called Fool's Flush In, because that's the name
because
of the movie.
The lyric is, they don't ever say only.
I
only know that because no, they just say Fools Rush In where wise men never go, but wise men never fall in love. I love that song so much. Did you know that? That's the only reason I know the specific lyrics is because I listen to that song probably 3 times a week.
Which, the version, the Elvis?
Can we go out with it?
Yeah, that's perfect.
What's that?
Which version do you like?
Can I throw one more thing your way as we're just on the subject, I guess, of wordplay? I wrote this on Twitter this morning, or maybe it was last night, because it really happened. I was driving home from the YMCA from another crushing defeat of the Sledge Hogs, and I was listening to As It Happens,
mm-hmm.
which is a CBC show. And they were interviewing some people that make a kids show. I think it's like maybe a kids TV show. It's puppet based, I believe. And on the kids TV show, there is a segment, or there's a show within the show called As It Flappens. And they were interviewing, I think, like a duck puppet who's like the host or a journalist associated with As It Flappens. And the entire conversation was just animal-based punnery between the host of As It Happens and the fake host of As It Flappens. And I went through every stage of grief listening to it, and I ended with, I'm kind of enjoying this.
Yeah.
And as I wrote on Twitter, this may be an indication that I live too close to Canada right now.
Yeah, they love puns on that show, man. They make Rachel Bell seem like a pun, and Sean DeTore seem like pun haters.
It was honestly like 4 minutes of unbroken, like, animal puns between, I couldn't tell if it was a duck or a sheep puppet, and the host of As It Happens, again, related to the show As It Flappens. only you would probably appreciate the just a good As It Happens reference.
Now I want to look it up, because I can see it, and I can see myself like hating, like you say, like getting excited and then being like, oh my God, this is going on too long. But then by the end, just
bargaining.
Beaten into submission by this thing. And listening to it several times. Hey, what version I Can't Help Falling in Love do you like, by the way? Which one did you play? You say you listened to it a bunch. Which version?
Well, I thought we were talking about the song Fools Rush In. Are we talking about different songs?
I am talking, because I just looked it up. Wise men say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the song Fools Rush In.
Oh, I didn't know that that was a song.
Fools rush in where wise men never go,
because
wise men never fall in love, but how would they know?
Okay, we have been talking about different. You're talking about.
But I just sang the song perfectly.
We even need to? So is Frank Sinatra is that the version that you like?
No, can we play? The version of the song I want to play is by this band, The Morning Benders, which they changed their name. They used to be called The Morning Benders. Now they have a different name, and I don't like the new name as much. But I reference this album pretty frequently on the show. They put an album together called The Bedroom Covers.
Oh, yeah.
And they just do a bunch of cover songs. I think they literally recorded them in one of the band members' bedroom, though, hence the name. We'll just do that. We'll go out with this version of Fools Rush In from The Morning Benders, which I highly recommend the whole record.
It's weird that they changed
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go Browns, go eat a bagel, don't go chasing waterfalls, don't go rushing in, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
My heart above my head. Though I see the danger there. If there's a chance for me, then I don't care. Who's rushing where wise men never go? For wise men never fall in love. So how are they to know? When we met, I felt my life begin. So open up your heart and let this fool rush in.
Power out.